This is Peace Talks, a forum on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. Dwight Eisenhower, 34th President of the United States, said, "I think that people want peace so much that one of these days government had better get out of their way and let them have it." September 14, 2005, legislation was introduced in Congress for a third time to establish a federal Department of Peace. The discussion you'll hear today on Peace Talks was recorded in 2003 when efforts to create federal and state departments of peace were starting to garner support.
I'm Suzanne Kreider. On July 11, 2001, Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich introduced legislation to create a cabinet-level agency dedicated to peacemaking and the study of peace. Kucinich said a Department of Peace would focus on non-military peaceful conflict resolution and would promote justice to expand human rights. It would also create a peace academy, similar to the five military service academies, with graduates dispatched to troubled areas around the globe to promote nonviolent conflict resolution. There's a national movement to support a federal cabinet-level Department of Peace, and there are several similar state initiatives to establish departments of peace, including New Mexico. On February 11, 2003, Senate Memorial 22, supporting a New Mexico Department of Peace, passed the state Senate by a vote of 31-4. Today on Peace Talks, we'll find out what a Department of Peace would do, who supports it, who opposes it, and what the chances are of it becoming a reality on either the federal or state level. We'll begin by talking with the man behind the federal initiative, Ohio Democratic Congressman Dennis Kucinich. He joins us today by phone from Washington, D.C. Thank you for making time for us today, Congressman.
Sure, I'm glad to do it.
What inspired you to bring this measure to the floor in July 2001?
The idea of a Department of Peace comes from the belief that we can work to make nonviolence an organizing principle in our society for domestic as well as international policy. At this time when our nation is in conflict with other nations, it's important for us to remember that we have the capacity to make war archaic, but we have to work towards those conditions. And the work can begin within government by creating a structure in the government to facilitate the creation of peace domestically and internationally.
So what would the structure be like? What would a Department of Peace do?
Well, on a domestic level, it would address those issues in our society which we're all familiar with, but which there's seldom an organized approach to dealing with: domestic violence, spousal abuse, violence in the home of any kind, child abuse, abuse of the elderly, problems that occur in our community, such as gang violence, violence in our schools, violence between police and various groups in communities, racial violence, violence against gays, anything that is a symptom of our society's inability to basically tame those impulses that seem to find a way of breaking out. And yet through education, we can create vehicles which can help to teach mediation, to teach children values of peace sharing, peace giving, mutuality. The idea is that through having a coordinated approach where the federal government supports either existing programs or helps to create new programs, we can create an awareness in our country that that we can actually work towards making this a more peaceful country.
But aren't we talking about reorganizing government? Because a lot of these domestic initiatives you've talked about are currently under Health and Human Services, for example.
Well, there is no, you know, there is no overall organized approach within the government. This isn't only about government reorganization. There are programs which can, which do support peaceful initiatives, but they're not really the work of the entire structure of government. But the idea of a Department of Peace is to demonstrate the commitment of the government to a broad-based approach where we would make the work of peace a national calling, and to have it be brought into every area of American life. And the way that you do that is to create a department which shows the significance and the importance of it. I mean, right now the United States spends over $400 billion a year for a department which is involved with armaments, involved with aggression, which is called upon to protect our country, but the meaning of it has been transformed as of late. We can change the awareness of the need for peace, make peace an overarching concern in our society through creating a department which the everyday work of that department is to inform the programs at every level of society.
When you say war can be archaic, we're really talking about social change, changing people's attitudes and beliefs. Can that be done through a government agency?
Well, of course, not alone, but we have to understand the impact of government in our society as a primary generator of those structures which create reality. A $400 billion defense budget says a lot about creating fear as well as the potential for war. The creation of the Department of Peace in and of itself presents the potential for the awareness that there's another path towards maintaining our society. The kind of social change which is needed can be furthered by creating a structure inside the government, just as the awareness of health problems in this country created the Department of Health and Human Services, the awareness of the need for a coordinated approach for education created the Department of Education, the awareness of a need for an approach on the environment created the Environmental Protection Agency. Now, whether or not those agencies function to their fullest is always a matter of debate, but what isn't debated is that the principles which brought about their creation represented the goal setting of a society. And we need to set goals for peace, and that's what a Department of Peace would seek to do.
So how much support was there initially in the House, and how much do you think you can get to further this initiative?
In the 107th Congress, there were 44 members of Congress who co-sponsored the bill. In this Congress, I expect that we'll get even more.
And do you think the war in Iraq has made it less likely or more likely that a Department of Peace has a future?
I think it makes it more likely, because people see that our nation has this capacity through its leadership to unleash aggressive war. And I think it's alarming many people when they find that a nation has a lack of anchor points to ensure that the tendencies towards war are tamed at the bureaucratic and administrative levels of a government. A Department of Peace would give a president options. A Secretary of Peace would be in on the cabinet meetings talking about the urgency of resolving matters in a nonviolent way and coming up with programs that do just that. So war is not inevitable. Peace can be inevitable if we work towards it. It's just that at this moment in American history, we're not working towards peace. Our government's working towards war.
So a Department of Peace could help the president have access to all kinds of experts, negotiators. Who would you love to have access to George Bush?
Well, today I think it'd be good if the president would accept the counsel of so many Americans who are trying to insist that there's a better way. It's not that it's just about one person. There is an awareness in this country. There's been tens of millions of people out in the streets of America who have pleaded with this administration not to go forward with war against Iraq. But with a Secretary of Peace whose job it was to communicate that, it would be important to have someone inside those meetings who could communicate the necessity for nonviolent conflict resolution.
Congressman Dennis Kucinich, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Bye.
When Representative Kucinich reintroduced his Department of Peace proposal in the House in 2003, 47 delegates co-sponsored it. New Mexico Republican Steve Pierce was not a co-sponsor and presented an opposite point of view in a brief interview with KUNM News.
I would suspect that it is not going to get a lot of excitement, at least on the Republican side. I would be skeptical of a Department of Peace that gives the impression that we're sitting over here as military rogues trying to export capitalism, and those things just aren't factual. They're not true.
New Mexico District 1 Representative Heather Wilson was also interviewed about the Department of Peace idea by KUNM News.
No, we have a Secretary of State, we have a Secretary of Defense, we have the U.S. Agency for International Development. I think we're probably covered. So, I guess, but Dennis is running for president. I guess he's got to come up with something.
Also on Peace Talks today, we're joined by Chris Griscom, an advocate for the Department of Peace and founder of both the Light Institute and the Nozomi School for Global Consciousness in Galisteo, New Mexico. Welcome, Chris.
It's my pleasure to be with you, Suzanne.
So, Chris, tell us a little bit about how you became involved in the state initiative for a Department of Peace.
Well, I've been involved or very focused on the Department of Peace on the national level. And in November, I believe, Dennis Kucinich, who is someone I've known for 23 years, came to speak in New Mexico. And after he left, I thought, here we are. There were thousands of people who came in a moment's notice to hear him speak. Why don't we have a Department of Peace? We have a state. And I'm a person who travels a lot around the world. And you know, when I say I'm from New Mexico, people say, ah, the birthplace of the bomb. And so I'm always saying, no, 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 wait a minute. Let me tell you about the people who live in New Mexico. And so it's deep and profound in my own heart for the world to see New Mexico in a different light. So we don't have to wait for a central government to put the stamp of approval. We could take the initiative and say, we will be the first state to have our own Department of Peace so that the people who live here realize that that's important to us. That's why.
So you actually got it started.
I did.
What did you do?
Well, the first thing I did, because I'm an apolitical person, was to call up my friend Mary Lou Cook, who is a Santa Fe treasurer, they call her. She's been very active in many aspects of the quality of life in New Mexico. And I said, Mary Lou, how do we do this? What is the political process? We set up about to create a group of people, some of whom were participating in other groups, peace groups, and bring them together, because so often, classically, people who are working for the same thing never speak to each other. They have their own little groups. So we brought them together and said, let's put forth our own bill. We began with a memorial, and the memorial passed in the Senate, and then it passed in the House, and before we could blink, the government of New Mexico had committed to the concept of a Department of Peace. And so I'm very thrilled to see that on all levels here, people are not resisting that concept. Because, of course, it's not in contradiction to other things. It's just a statement about the direction of ourselves as humans and New Mexicans.
What would you like to see the Department of Peace do in New Mexico?
Mostly for me, because I'm an educator, and the Nozomi School for Global Consciousness has had an Academy of Peace. We've been teaching peace for 14 years. I would like for us to bring the consciousness, the presence of peace, into our communities, into our families, on all levels of our state. And so I feel that, you know, we've always said in America, the pursuit of happiness, we need to move on now to the pursuit of peace. So I feel that we need to bring peace into our households as a word that we use, as something we teach our children, that we say to them, that we practice. You know, and I think that we need to begin making that not just a concept, not just a word, but something that makes us cognizant of the choices. Peace is a choice.
What would it look like in schools, for example? Because sometimes that scares people when you start talking about even character education. Uh-huh. How do you see this happening in a public school, for example?
I think we have quite often actually gone out and done little peace studies programs in some of the local schools. And it's been very popular with the high schoolers because we present it as a conversation. We talk about the fear that we have of each other and why we have fear of each other and our sense of self. So it's really more of a social understanding and a a new view of what is our sense of self, and then conversing about when are you peaceful, what scares you, what makes you fearful. And when we begin to talk about those things, we can move to a level where we can begin to release the energy that causes us to be triggered and say, no, my gang against your gang, or my God against your God, or whatever those things are. And you would be amazed at how articulate an 8-year-old is about peace. They know about peace in their family or not. They know about what's happening in their neighborhoods with their friends. And so they actually understand the concept very, very well. And I feel that peace is something that is germane to all humans. It's not that we don't have it. It's just that we've never learned how to wield it or to use it. Because actually, Suzanne, if you and I begin to entangle in some way, and then I choose peace, if I become aware, wait a minute, I don't really want to go to war with you, not verbally or physically or emotionally or any other level, and I look at you then and select a different path of communication, it's very difficult to fight with me.
Your Department of Peace initiative has been very successful. So you,
yes.
You got this memorial passed.
That's right.
Now, what is the next step?
The next step is to, and it's what we're doing right now, is we're holding meetings every week to begin to broadcast that or let New Mexicans know that this is up for them and that they can support it and they can gather together and practice peace and converse about it and then bring it to the legislature so that in the next year we will have a bill. Now, Congressman Kucinich created for me a generic Department of Peace bill that could be passed out to every state. And in fact, what I'm doing right now is I'm taking it around the state. I took it to Arizona a few weeks ago. I'll be taking it to South Africa and Brazil, again, with the concept of what if everywhere government said, yes, we'll invest in that. That's worth our money. Because peace is economically viable.
Oh, tell me about that.
Well, it simply is. Yes, let's talk about economics. No, again, we have the concept that war is economically viable. But it actually, if you look at the figures, it's not. And so right now we spend millions and billions of dollars dealing with domestic violence, mopping up after violence in our healthcare system, just in all levels of our society, we put a lot of money into taking care of what happens when there is not peace.
But, Chris, I can imagine that critics of a New Mexico Department of Peace,
yes,
would say, wow, this sounds way too touchy-feely.
Yes.
We don't need this in government. This is more...
Oh, yes, we do. Oh, yes, we do. Hello up there. We do indeed. But I'm just talking about a human element here. And just because I want to bring that into the conversation, I'm not saying we can't have laws and heads of state and so forth and so on in those structures. Yes, we can. But there cannot be peace unless we learn what it is to be human on a higher octave. In fact, excuse me for saying such an outrageous thing. But you know what? People are spiritual in their hearts, and it's not about religions. It's about life and death and connection and communication. And that's the crux of our problem right now. We need to come back to the mystery of life and our willingness to say we want a better life. It is our right. What's going to give us a better life? The capacity to be safe, to be unafraid. And we can make that happen on a governmental level.
But what would you say to folks who say, well, we're safe by using a defense system that costs $400 billion a year? And what would you say to someone who says, well, it's natural to fight?
Mm-hmm. It's natural to fight, but it is against cosmic law to kill. Isn't that something that we agree on? And I would get a silly smirk on my face, I'm afraid, when they tried to tell me that there is a technology that can keep us safe. And I know you can't do it. You can't do it. You can spend all the money you want, but you can't do it. We have got to switch our consciousness to a consciousness of inclusion. We have to take care of the world's problems. We have to take care of it in New Mexico. We cannot have a continuing separation between the rich and the poor. The technology has to be a technology that includes a human consciousness. I worked many years in prisons, and I discovered that you can put somebody in jail and you can make them so that they can't even move, but you can never touch their consciousness. And look what's happening here. You know, you can put them in jail for 20 years at a huge expense to the taxpayers, and as soon as they come out, they'll go right out and hurt somebody because they feel justified, they feel frustrated, they feel angry. And so we have to stop thinking that's touchy-feeling and get about to human nature. Yes, it's human nature to scrapple to the top. Of course, because that's the kind of totem pole structure we have of survival. We have to address the issue of survival on every level of our being, so that if we used some of that technology on making the quality of life worthy, we wouldn't have to fight about oil. We wouldn't have to fight about food. We wouldn't have to fight about space. Look at the world's wars right now and see what they're about. And those things, those themes that they're about could be changed if we wanted to invest in the goodness of humanity. And I'm not embarrassed to say that with my full intellectual capacity. Humans are good at heart.
We've got some folks here in the audience who might want to ask a question. If you could step up to the microphone and give us your first name and then your question or comment.
Hi, my name's Ron, and I'm curious. It seems that institutions, whether public or private, can only represent the dominant paradigm of the culture. And so I wonder if that's true, and there seems to be evidence to that case, or evidence to that effect, that can we ever expect an institutional organization to be anything other than a token gesture, since it has to happen grassroots, it has to happen with people, because a democratic society can only elect people who represent the beliefs of the masses, and the beliefs of our masses are not peace.
That's true. And also, unfortunately, often after we've elected them, we lose our voice in terms of them, don't we? So I understand what you're saying. And certainly, this is not a conversation of perfection, but it's a conversation of a new kind of responsibility. And that's why I personally am so focused on the education of peace. Because, for example, in this legislative process, when it came to the hearings, I was thrilled to observe teenagers marching right up to the microphone and saying things that were somewhat shocking in terms of their clarity and their honesty and the force of them. And so I think that that's where it really begins. I agree with you. It's a grassroots, but we can't wait forever. Grassroots takes a long period of time, and that's why I'm saying we need to organize at the grassroots level and then make known how we see that functioning, where we do have a voice. And it's not going to become a department that answers only to the higher octaves, but literally has to answer to the people.
Hello, Chris. My name is Holly.
Hello, Holly.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit more specifically about some of the things you do with young people, how you bring that message, and on the other hand, how you work also with the structures that are already in place, for example, the educational structures.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to hear about that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Well, what we've been doing is going into schools and talking about peace, again, as I was saying before, or the lack of it, and letting students really speak out. Usually they begin by speaking out about their fears. If we're working with smaller children, we realize that they witness violence, emotional violence. See, children are very sensitive. And so we help them to have experiences of peace and then to imagine that as something that they can offer to someone else, to their parents. We help them to understand that the world around them that is not peaceful is not their fault. It's not them. There's nothing wrong with them. We have to have a world where from children to old people, we have a sense of self. Because if I'm always jealous of you, or if I'm afraid you're going to get more of the pie, or if I'm afraid of you because you're different than me, then peace becomes difficult. So we broach those conversations. We dig with students to help them to discover any, let's say, thought forms that they might have inherited culturally that cause them to be afraid of others or to hold their distance or to judge others. And then, of course, we always ask them, well, when was the last time you felt peaceful? And it's amazing. I would say 80% of the population, whether they're children or they're old people, will choose a memory of being peaceful that has to do with being in nature. What about all these cities in the world where they never see a tree, you know, where they never have anything living in their house? So we need to help people to understand that peace is an energy, like happiness, like love, like fear, that comes from within us. And then when we access it within us, we build a platform. Because if you can, for example, remember a time when you felt peaceful, then I can help you to transfer that out into the world around you. It's very applicable to public school education.
I read or heard somewhere, Chris, that we literally become adrenaline junkies, that we become addicted to the chemical in our bodies. And if it's true that all this violence we're surrounded by has made us addicted to the adrenaline, how do you ever wean people from such a powerful chemical as that?
You know, I have worked for 45 years in public health and in emotional health around the world, and I learned something very early that was thrilling to me, and it's the basis of my work now, and that is that the emotional body will just keep repeating whatever has stimulated it. And so, again, yes, that's very difficult. But what we do is that we initiate a new food to the emotional body. And so how we would train people or wean them from adrenaline is to help them find and let go of and surrender into their own capacity to, excuse me for being, what would you call it, quaint, loving, happy, peaceful, unafraid, powerful. You know, when we feel powerful, it's a rush. It's just that we've learned to be powerful over another. There is nothing in the world like being powerful with another. That is human destiny, and it's the deepest cry of all humans. We're a group animal. We want approval. We want to belong. We want to link up with something or someone else. And so as we apply what we call it Nijonic, technologies of consciousness, to helping people to experience that, the emotional body will let go of that fear state very quickly when it comes into the rush of wholeness. I promise you.
Chris Griscom is an advocate for the New Mexico Department of Peace. Thanks for joining us today, Chris.
Thank you for having this program.
Thanks to U.S. Representatives Dennis Kucinich, Heather Wilson, and Steve Pierce, as well as Chris Griscom, for being on Peace Talks today. You can hear this program again and link to other sources on this topic at our website, peacetalksradio.com. That's peacetalksradio.com, where you can hear all the programs in our series, sign up for a monthly newsletter, and find out how you can support this series. Peace Talks is produced by Good Radio Shows Incorporated, a nonprofit media organization with information online at goodradioshows.org. Support for Peace Talks comes in part from the McCune Charitable Foundation of New Mexico. Music by Allie Adelman. For Suzanne Kreider, I'm Paul Ingalls. Thanks for listening.